Yeah, I can. Okay. All right. So, good evening. So, we were in the middle of the second bracha. We'll just try to say a little bit more about that. So if you have a bencher in front of you, that's helpful. We're in the bracha of Noda Lecha Hashem Elokeinu Al Shenchavta L'Avoseinu Eretz Chemda Tova Erchava. I think that's what we were up to. We talked about the role of the second bracha, which was instituted by Yehoshua upon our entry into the land. And it indicates our appreciation for the connection to Eretz Yisrael, which was especially appropriate. Last week we were in the middle of 9 days and we spoke about it. Here we are in the aftermath of Nachamu, and we're able to appreciate these themes all the more. And we recognize this importance in this bracha, which we incorporate as a part of our appreciation for all of our sustenance. And as we discussed last week, there are certain key themes that have to make it into the bracha, and we'll see them as we continue. But we have this idea, Eretz Chemda, it is a land that has been desired, a land that was desired by Moshe Rabbeinu. It was the topic of last week's parsha, his great tefillah that we should be able to enter into the land, that he should be able to enter into the land personally. So Yeshua was impressed by this, and he refers to it as an Eretz Chemda. And we also say here, Va'al Shos Eisonu Hashem Elokeinu Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that we recognize that God took us out of Mitzrayim. And the Chassam Sofer, in his drashos, in his comments on Chumash, the Chassam Sofer notes that it seems a little out of order to talk here about Yetzias Mitzrayim if we're already referring to entering into the land. So we're past Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why are we talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim at this point? And he suggests, also appropriate for this time of year and for all year round, the reality that through all of our various travels and through all of our movements from one place to the next throughout history, our focus was always on our return to the land and our connection to the land. And therefore, we evoke in the context of this bracha that even in the time in Mitzrayim, that was where our attention was turned. And the Sat Merav, actually, believe it or not, you may think this is not something you'd expect to hear from the Sat Merav, but in his Haggadah, he has a comment, takes this a little bit further, where he notes that at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we were bringing the Korban Pesach, so around that time, so we were working on tshuva, we were working on returning to the values of the Jewish people, separating ourselves from the values of Mitzrayim, and we know that the Mishnah tells us, as we practice today, that whenever you are outside of the land and you are davening, so you turn your attention towards Eretz Yisrael, towards Yerushalayim. So therefore, at this point, when they were eating the Korban Pesach and they were already in a state of tshuva, so they were turning their mindset, they were turning their attention towards Eretz Yisrael, towards Yerushalayim. And as Ramban comments in the Seches Erevin, it's going to be Daf Yomi coming up pretty soon. Comments in Daf Yudayin, it's going to be in a few weeks yet. But the idea of an Erev Chumen, that a person's location is associated with where their food is. So at the time of their Korban Pesach, that they were thinking about being in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the bracha evokes that idea, that at the time of the Yetzias Mitzrayim, we were mentally already entering into the land, and therefore this bracha reflects that. Fascinating idea. Again, maybe not what you would have expected from the Sat Merav, but an additional angle to what is represented by this phrasing in the benchim. And we refer to here the bris, al brischos chesamtim v'sareinu. We saw last week that the Gemara tells us that mentioning the bris is a crucial component of this bracha. Bris and Torah are vital parts of this bracha. It's because of that that we have a right to the land, because of the covenant and because of the connection to Talmud Torah. And the Kalbo quotes from the Ravid that women didn't say this phrase because they're not part of the mitzvah of bris. But the Mishnah Berurah notes that our minhag nowadays is that women do say it, that men and women have the same text invention, and we understand that we're all beneficiaries of what the bris represents, even if one personally doesn't have the mitzvah of bris milah. But the bris itself signifies a covenant between the Jewish people and God, and it's that covenant that gets us into the land in the first place. And therefore, all of that is indicated by this language, and therefore the practice is, men and women, we all use this phrase. We're grateful for the chukim. Why are we so grateful for the chukim particularly? Rav David Cohen in his Haggadah has a comment based on the Rambam. The Rambam in the end of Hilchos Mi'ilah in Mishneh Torah, the Rambam often has hashkaftic ideas in the end of various sections in Mishneh Torah, various sections of the Halacha. So there, the Rambam in Hilchos Mi'ilah, so he talks about the idea that when it comes to chukim, we don't necessarily understand what they're about. That's why we call them chukim. And we have to still, nonetheless, have respect for them. We have to have appreciation for God's commandments, even if we don't understand them. And he draws the comparison there. The reason it's in Mi'ilah. Mi'ilah means to misuse, to appropriate that which is hektish. So here you have a mitzvah in the Torah. It's by definition holy. So even if we don't understand what it's about, we have a obligation to respect it and to treat it with great reverence. And then, as Rabbi Cohen goes on to say, so because we are careful about the chukim, so that's also why we have schar for the mishpatim. That's also why we are credited for what we do in the areas that we do feel like we understand it. If one were to follow only the mishpatim, if one were only to observe the mitzvot that they think they understand and not to observe the chukim, so then it wouldn't necessarily be any expression of religious devotion at all. It might just mean that you do what makes sense to you, but there isn't any religious commitment there. But because we have the chukim is an opportunity for us to display that indeed we do have this religious commitment, and that's something that we are able to honor. So it shows that the mishpatim also come from a place of religious commitment, and therefore we have schar for that as well. So all of the schar that we get, all of the recognition that we get for our religious involvement is because we also acknowledge the chukim. So therefore, we are grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for providing us with the chukim. That's something that we are thankful for as well, because we recognize what that does for the totality of our religious existence. So the Achayim Chayim V'Chesed Shachon Antanu. So here, some of the commentaries note that when we're talking about Al-Khilas Mazon, it sounds like we are talking about the same kind of idea that was already in the first bracha. So why are we repeating that here? It seems like that was the theme of the first bracha. So some suggest that when we talk about the relationship to Eretz Yisrael, when we talk about the Torah, so we are expressing the fact that there is a particular relationship between the Jewish people and God that is distinct in its nature from the relationship that God has with the whole world. So yes, in the first bracha, we acknowledge that God sustains the whole world. And here we bring up Achilas Mazon again. We're talking about how that reflects a particular connection between God and the Jewish people. Now, the bracha pauses here with the idea of B'chol Yom, B'chol Eis, B'chol Shah. There is a discussion among the commentaries, among the Avram, and the Das Torah later, and the Prima Gadim. All the commentaries talk about what the proper language here is. We talk about B'chol Yom, every day, B'chol Eis and B'chol Shah. How do you translate Eis and Shah? They both mean hour, they both mean time, they mean different versions of time. Should they both be said? There is some discussion about what exactly the proper text should be there. Some understand Eis and Shah to mean the same thing. Sounds like eighth means a very short period of time. Like a shah also can mean a very short period of time. So together, the two could mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us during all the seasons, during all the different periods, and also in the smallest period of time, that every moment, every second, we are protected, we are sustained, and therefore not only over the long term, but the fact that not a second goes by without God's protection, that's also something that we acknowledge. Here in the middle of the second bracha is where we would insert Al-Hanisim. This is Hanukkah or Purim. So then we would put here Al Hanisim Vi Al HaPurkan. It's actually a discussion in the Gemara in the second paragraph of Maseches Shabbos has a question whether or not Al Hanisim really belongs in benching or not. That we know that we have Al Hanisim in the context of Tefillah. We know that we insert it over there. Whether it belongs in benching or not is a topic of a machlokes. And the Gemara has the question as to what exactly is the reason to differentiate. Should we say that because it's the Rabbanan, because Chanukah and Purim are not ordained from the Torah itself, and here Birchas HaMazon is a mitzvah min HaTorah, so maybe we wouldn't necessarily associate the two? Or would we say that because of Pirsumei Nisa, because there is this extra aspect of trying to publicize the miracle, so therefore we take this opportunity also to publicize the miracle? Even though, as Tosfos points out, it's a different level of Pirsum, part of why we're not so sure, because when you have tefillah, so tefillah is done with tzibur, and that's an opportunity to publicize the miracle publicly. But one is benching, so benching is done on the individual level, so it's not necessarily so clear that Pirsumei Nisa has as much expression. In the Lakewood Yeshiva, they used to have a practice every day that they would daven mincha, they would daven the Hechi Kedusha. They wouldn't say a full Chazaras Hashat because they wanted to preserve more time for learning, so therefore they had a briefer recitation for mincha. They wouldn't have the whole Chazaras Hashat. But there was one exception that on Chanukah, then they would say the whole Chazaras Hashat because Rav Aaron Cutler insisted that we should say Al Hanisim out loud because that's the fulfillment of Pirsumei Nisa, that you should take every opportunity to express that. I remember I got married on Chanukah. I remember my father, Zechon Levrach, insisted that on the invitation, we should say not only the English date and the Hebrew date, but also mention what day of Chanukah was, Kiyum and Pirsumei Nisa. We take every opportunity to make sure to emphasize that Chanukah and Purim, they should get the attention. So therefore, we have the minig to put it in. It's not clear from the Gemara that there is a chiyuv. The conclusion is decisive, so it's not clear that there's an obligation to put Al Hanisim into benching, but we have a minig to insert Al Hanisim into benching, and we insert it specifically into this bracha, which was also a discussion in the Gemara, that in this way it parallels Shmoneh Esrei. That in Shmoneh Esrei, it's in the context of Modim, and here in benching, it's in the bracha of Hodah, it's in the bracha of Noda, so Noda Lecha. So therefore, it's an expansion on the theme, that in both those cases, we are thanking God for everything, Modim Anachnu Lach in Shmoneh Esrei, Noda Lecha here in benching. So we thank God for everything that he's done for us. And when we have Pirsumei Nisa, when we have the desire to publicize a miracle, that's a fulfillment of the idea of Hodah. That's the idea that we want to express our gratitude in a more specific way. So therefore, we take that opportunity to expand on these themes in Tefillah and in benching by getting into more detail. So Soloveitchik explained that the idea of Pirsumei Nisa is that Pirsumei Nisa itself is a form of tefillah. We find that the halacha requires us to go to great lengths to perform a mitzvah if that mitzvah is a function of Pirsumei Nisa. So Chanukah candles, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch say that we have to make sure that we fulfill these mitzvahs. We have to go to great lengths, and it's more demanding on us as far as expenditure and as far as our need to fulfill it under all circumstances, even more than a mitzvah that might be from the Torah itself. Here we have rabbinically ordained mitzvahs, and yet we have a tremendous focus on getting them accomplished. So Soloveitchik explained that the idea is that the Pirsumei Nisa is itself a tefillah, that essentially we're saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has provided us with miracles in the past, and we want to recognize that, and we want to ask for miracles in the future through that recognition. So because we want to continue being treated miraculously, because we want to have more such experiences, so therefore we make sure to publicize the miracle as an expression of Hodah. And therefore, the halacha puts such a great demand on us to make sure we do it and doesn't allow us to get off of limitations that might work in other areas of halacha, because we're asking a Kadosh Baruch Hu to go above and beyond his budget, so to speak. That normally he runs the world off the Derech HaTeva, and he doesn't do miracles, and we're saying, please go above and beyond. So therefore, we also go above and beyond. So we do whatever we can to try to publicize the miracle. So here we have an opportunity for extra Pirsuminitza. So we put it in. It's essentially an expansion of this idea of Hodah that we are expressing. The Brisker Rav pointed out that noteworthy that in Al-Hamichya, so if we say Al-Hamichya on Shabbat, so we have a line that parallels Ritzei, and if we say Al-Hamichya on Yontif, so we have a line that parallels Yalaviyavo. But if we say Al-Hamichya on Purim or on Chanukah, so we don't have anything to represent Al-Hanisim. So how come Al-Hanisim doesn't have anything in Al-Hamichya and Ritzei and Yalaviyavo do? So he explained that here, like we just said, the whole idea of Al-Hanisim is essentially it expands the text of Hodah and makes it more specific. And by contrast, the whole point of Al-Hamichya is it is an abbreviation. It's a kitzer. We only put in what's necessary. So therefore, we're not going to use this extra expanded language because the whole point of that is keeping things short. Okay, so then we get back into the bracha after saying those additions when the circumstances call for it. And we pick up and we say the al-hakol. And al-hakol is presumably defined by what we just referenced before. And we mentioned last week that the Kajigal of Arav suggested that if one fails to have the proper intent in the previous paragraph of Noda, we had mentioned that Shulchan Aruch Arav says that not only do we have to mention Bris V'Torah, but we have to also be aware of them. We have to have intent. So the Kajigal of Arav had said, but if you neglect to have that intent, but then you remember now the Al-Hakol, so you can instill these words with that intent, because if you remember what you should have been remembering before, so that becomes the meaning of Al-Hakol, and that's what that paragraph takes on. However, there are some who suggest an additional level of meaning here, that Al-Hakol represents unity, and it represents the idea that we're talking about Gashmius and Ruchnius coming together, and that that's what these tefillos are meant to express, that to the extent that we are bringing together Gashmius and Ruchnius, so too, that's what this language, Al-Hakol, is meant to convey. We say Al-Hakol, Anachnu Modim Lach, and Yivarch Musach. So the idea of Anachnu Modim Lach is also a observation that Berhetev and the Mishnah Berurah note that Anachnu is a more majestic language. We could also say Anu. Anu also means we, means us, but Anachnu is a stronger language. And some of the Svarim, they note, the Sefer Tzigola has a whole discussion about this, that, for example, if we look in the Haggadah, so we say that B'chol HaLeilos Anu, then all the other nights we're just Anu, but this night, L'shikach Anachnu Chayavim L'hodos, it is a more majestic kind of language representing that we are looking towards a more exalted status. And by contrast, so for example, in the Ila, so the Lashon of Vidoy is Ma Anu, Ma Chayenu. When we feel more low, we say Anu. When we feel more exalted, so we say Anachnu. And that's what that represents. So we say Anachnu Modim Lach, Yisparach Shimcha V'Sikol Chai. The Sfarim discuss the grammar there, why it's V'Sikol Chai and not the Tekol Chai. Ketamir, Yolom V'Ed, Kakasov. And now we quote this week's Parsha. This week's Parsha is, of course, the source. It's worth making note as we study the Parsha this week, Parsha Sekev, so we can reflect on these past few weeks that we have been discussing. The first Aliyah of this week's Parsha, the Achalta, the Savasa, Uverachta, the Shem Elokech, Al Arasa, Tova, Asher, Nosan Lach. And like we said then also, that this idea that this second bracha that we are completing here is also an obligation, Min HaTorah, even though the indications are that it was only composed at time when the Jews entered into the land. Nonetheless, it's included in the mitzvah min haTorah. Here you have this past tense, God has given you the land. So once you have been given the land, so then that is the opportunity to fulfill this mitzvah min haTorah. And then we end off with Baruch Haaretz El HaMazon, and the Pasa Shulchan, which was put together by Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, and talks a lot about halachos of Eretz Yisrael. So in the Pasa Shulchan, it writes that if somebody is eating from the produce of Eretz Yisrael, so then the conclusion should be different. Instead of Al Haaretz the Al HaMazon, the way we have it now, which kind of conveys two different things, that we thank God for whatever food we're eating in New Jersey, and we thank God for the land. But if we're eating from the produce of the land, so then the language should be Bial Haaretz, Bial Mizono Seah. That's how the Pasa Shulchan quotes. But Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in Yeridei in Chelek Gimel, where he says, so we don't do that there. We don't change the minig, and we leave it as is. Okay, so that's as far as the second bracha. Maybe we'll just say a few words to introduce the third bracha, that I think last week is our final session, so we'll have to cover as much as we can next week to get to the end of benching. So we'll just introduce the third bracha now, and we'll go into the details next week. So the third bracha is more specific than Berachos Haaretz. It gets us to Yerushalayim specifically, and it focuses on Yerushalayim and the Mikdash, and Rosh Hashanah Shlita talks about this in his Sefer Mikveh Hatzon, where he talks about the role of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim has a double role. It is both the political capital of the Jewish land, it is the political capital of the land of Israel, Kiryas Melech Rav, and it is also the holy city, the Ir HaKodesh B'Hamikdash. So for that reason, it reflects specifically our expression of our nationhood. And the malucha there has to be for the Malchus Beis Avod, which most completely expresses God's charge to us. And therefore, like the Gemara says in Brachos and Daftim Chesim Adbei, that if one does not mention Yerushalayim, so one is not in fulfillment. This completes this idea of what the Berachos Haaretz represents. And this is a theme, if you look in the commentary of Shamshon Rafal Hirsch in this week's Parsha, again, an opportunity while you're studying Parsha Seikah, you can read all of the Mefarshim that have much to say about benching. So if you look in Shamshon Rafal Hirsch's comment, he talks about how Yerushalayim most specifically expresses the idea of our mission, of what we are charged to do, and therefore it is something that we are able to most particularly give expression to as far as what it is we're here for. And therefore that becomes a reflection not only of us as the Jewish people, but also as individuals fulfilling our potential through the context of the cloud. In the Sefer Berachos HaMazon Menucha, so it points out also that the idea of the focus in the Beis HaMikdash and the Karbanos has to do with the idea that there is achila that is connected, that the consumption of food as part of the Hakravas HaKarbanos, the eating kunshin, is also associated with that, and therefore it's appropriate for benching. And one might perhaps close on this idea that the notion of kudshim being referenced here in benching reflects the fact that we want to eat not only to stay alive and not only to enjoy ourselves, but also as the context of Sudas Mitzvah. So to whatever extent we're able to reflect upon the Hakravas HaKarbanos and the Achila of the Sudas Mitzvah, that's something that we cherish. That's something, again, very relevant to our Tkufa of post-Nachmu now, post-9 days and post-Nachmu. And when we abstain from eating meat and drinking wine during the 9 days, it's not really an expression of Avelus. An Avel is allowed to eat meat and drink wine during the 9 days. But the idea is that we mourn the Beis HaMikdash, that during the context of the Beis HaMikdash, when there were Karbanos, so meat was eaten as part of Avodah, wine was there as part of the Nisuch. And the Gemara in Bava Basra says that after the Churban, they wanted to get rid of meat and they wanted to get rid of wine completely because we couldn't do it together with the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says it wasn't sustainable. The same logic would mean we'd have to get rid of bread and water also, so we never took on that practice. But during the 9 days, when we're more sensitive to what this means, so we have the custom of abstaining from meat and from wine. So the idea of remembering that connection, it makes sense, especially in the context of Berachas HaMazon, that we should be reconnected with that mentality, that we should be reminded how there is a concept of eating for the sake of a mitzvah. And now the mentality that we have, when it was instituted by David, it was a part of the affirmative idea that was taking place. Now, unfortunately, in our context, it's more longing, aspirational. We wish that we could be returned to that. But once again, through connecting to these themes in our benching, our hope is that indeed we will be connected to that fully sooner rather than later. So I thank you all so much for putting up with this unusual format and unusual style. Hopefully, God willing, next week for our last portion, we will be back under normal circumstances. And I wish you all a wonderful week, and you should have safety, and you should have good health, you should have electricity, you should have everything you need to have a successful and uplifting week. Thank you so much.